to Comic Talk Today for Wednesday, June 20th, 2018. Yes, it's Comic Book Day, and I'm probably reading comics right now. Maybe. Depends what time of the day you're listening. I might actually be at work. Who knows? But anyways, I hope you're all enjoying your new Comic Book Day. And there's a lot of great books out this week. I can't wait to read them. I've only managed to read a couple because I got a few early copies of some books. But it looks to be an exciting one. Normally, I would take the time on Wednesday to do a rant. And as of last week, I've started doing listener questions. But I got a lot of really good feedback on a couple things that I wanted to talk about. And I had some great questions that came at me on Twitter. I want to talk about those also. And you know what? To be honest, the topic that I wanted to discuss today, the more I thought about it to try to see what my thoughts were on it, the more I realized I kind of didn't care to talk about it. And it wasn't that interesting. So instead, I've decided to do something else. And fortunately, with the world of comics, there is always something to talk about. Not just comics, but the stuff going all around it in general. And one thing that I wanted to bring up, and this will tie into a question that I'll do a little later in the episode, is the new pop-up spinner rack program that's coming from Diamond Comic Distributors. The only place in the world, well, I mean, in the US and the UK, I think, where you can get comic books. It looks like, yes, they're bringing back the spinner rack. I'm going to read a little quote here, a little information from an article I found. And it says, in the program, comic shops would purchase 44 pocket racks for placement of comics in other complementary, in quotes, businesses. We're thinking about stores with the kind of clientele that would be interested in comics, Diamond Executive Director of Sales Mike Schimmel said. The book, record, toy, or game store around the corner, the hospital gift shop down the street, drugstores, convenience stores, movie theaters, you name it. Since there really are comic books for everyone, there are lots of possibilities, and each retailer will know best what might work in their communities. Now, some of you might be thinking, spinner racks? What the F are you talking about? Back in the days, when we had to walk up and down the hills, barefoot, in 3 feet of snow, going to school, shirtless, with, I don't know, whatever else your grandparents say. We had spinner racks, and they were great. They were everywhere. I think the last place to have something similar was Toys R Us, rest in peace, where they had the little racks by the registers where they still sold comics. But back in the days, we had a spinner rack, and it was, I don't know, how tall was it? I don't remember, because I was, like, tiny when these things were out. I don't know, 5 foot tall? 4 foot tall? And, you know, they had 11 pockets on each side, so four sides, and you could spin around. That's how you could get your comics when you went to, like, I don't know, the deli to get a sandwich. Some of you in the Midwest might not even know what a deli is. Sorry, I grew up in New York. We had delis everywhere. But that was actually one of my first introductions. I used to go to this little Korean deli. Well, it was more than a deli. It was like a one-stop shop. But yeah, it was a deli. It was run by this old Korean man and his wife. And then I think he ended up retiring or maybe passed away and his son took it over. And then it wasn't as good. When you walked in, the whole left-hand side was, how deep was the store? I mean, the store was not very wide. I'd say maybe like 15 foot wide, but it was pretty long. It was, you know, like, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 feet long. And all down the left-hand side, the first half of the wall was all comics. Then the second half was all magazines. And then in the back wall, there were the naughty magazines. Of course, they had little covers on them so you couldn't see any boobies. And then on the right-hand side, he had like coolers with refreshments and a long counter with like candy. And that's where he had all his like meats and whatever. So you can go there. It was right by the subway station. So when you went to get on the subway to go to work, you could stop at the little Korean deli and get yourself a little fried egg sandwich that was freaking banging. I still remember that. Anyways, that was my introduction to comics. And he also had a couple spinner racks, oddly enough. Even though he had so much space for comics, he had spinner racks. When his son took it over, the shop wasn't quite the same. And it's actually pretty convenient that that's around the time that I found comic shops. There was a comic shop, and of course it was all comics. Back then, the comic shops, at least in the area where I was at, were all comics and magazines, and then like magic cards, or like, you know, back in the day we had comic book cards too, right? Like Flair and, oh god, what was the other one? Like Top something? Tops. And then like a few other gaming related things. But, you know, Magic was starting to get big, so they sold Magic cards. They had a couple tables for Magic, the Gathering games. And that shop was great. Anyways, spinner racks. See, I start talking and I get lost in my thoughts. But spinner racks are great, and they were everywhere. Like, even if you went to a store that didn't have, you know, comic books. I remember our supermarket had a spinner rack by the registers. Matter of fact, I think they might have had a couple. And so, you know, that was one thing. Or like if you go to Duane Reade, they used to have a spinner rack in there. And of course, all that went away when the newsstand market kind of imploded. Comics kind of ended up being direct distribution, going to the direct market. So selling directly to comic shops. And one day I'll talk about the history of all that because it's super interesting how all that happened. And now Diamond's bringing it back. And it's interesting because a few months ago there was a Kickstarter to bring back a nice spinner rack. Because of course, in particular, guys that run comic shops grew up in that era, maybe even had a shop back then and had the racks, and they miss them because Diamond wasn't doing them. Well, guess what? They're bringing them back. And you might be thinking, like, that seems kind of dumb. Why would they bring back the spinner rack? I think the program is actually really interesting and could end up working. So a while ago, I was going to do this whole thing where variants aren't killing the industry, Diamond is, and I still kind of believe that, to be honest with you. Maybe one day I'll end up actually bringing my thoughts on that into this program. But back when we had the newsstand market, things worked a little bit differently. They work like magazines work now, right? So the store would have a place where they could have the comics, and then, I think originally they would buy them, then eventually what would happen is they would kind of be in consignment, right? So they wouldn't pay for the comics unless those comics were sold. And the way that they would prove that they were sold or not sold is they would rip off the cover and send back the books. And that's how they were credited for whatever sales they actually made. All that, of course, went away. Direct market came about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Magazines still work this way, by the way. If you go to a store and you see magazines and you wonder why the hell do people still read magazines, first of all, and second of all, why do these stores have them? It's because they're not paying for them. The only time they pay is whenever they actually sell one of these magazines. This new spinner rack program is actually interesting, and I'm not sure exactly what to think about it, because it works on consignment. However, it doesn't work on consignment directly from that business to Diamond. This is being done through a third party, and that third party are comic shops. Now, I find this strategy pretty interesting, because it kind of entices the shop to do a good job at placing these new spinner racks in businesses that, you know, will actually sell comics. And that makes sense. Now, of course, you might think to yourself, why would a shop put a spinner rack in a different place outside of their shop? They're cannibalizing their own sales. And I think you might be right in some respects. They are cannibalizing their sales. However, this is kind of like the appetizer before the main course. I mean, they mentioned record stores. I don't have any record stores around here. I'm sure there's still some somewhere. Not around here. So let's just do, toy stores. That doesn't work either. Game store doesn't really work either because now GameStop is going to be carrying comics. So that's kind of out of the window. I guess we'll go with bookstores, but the only one left is Barnes & Noble, and they already have trades, and they've tried comics, and they don't sell there. Okay, so maybe that doesn't work. So let's just do movie theaters, okay? I think that's a good one. Movie theaters work for me. Of course, there's always new comic book movies out, and it makes sense if a comic book or if a movie theater has a spinner rack, some people that go to see the movie might want to pick up some of the comics. And so it makes sense for the shop that's putting these spinner racks into those businesses that they would want to do, like when the Avengers movie comes out, they would put, I don't know, a couple different runs of the Avengers, you know, new stuff, old stuff, whatever, maybe some trades. Who would be watching these things in a movie theater is also a little weird, right? So in a place like a pharmacy, like a CVS or a Walgreens, maybe they would work there. Let's do that. If you put them in a CVS or Walgreens, might work, right? Smaller store, they have a staff dedicated to making sure that people aren't stealing the merchandise to begin with. In a movie theater, this wouldn't work because what the hell do the ticket people care about that? They don't care. The people at the concession stands, they don't care either. They just want to sell popcorn. Regardless of that, we'll just stick with the movie theater thing. So if my local shop, Borderlands Comics, fantastic store, by the way, check them out if you're in Greenville, South Carolina ever. If they decide they want to put one of these spinner racks at the local theater, what changes here is the way that the books are distributed. So previously, Diamond would just like send out the comics and they would be put on the rack. Okay. And then whatever sells, sells. Whatever doesn't sell, they get sent back. Now with this new program, they're enticing comic book shops to actually curate the list of books that go on the rack. And I find that pretty interesting because of course they're going to have popular titles, right? So like Batman, Superman, Captain America, Iron Man, whatever. Venom, that's a top seller now. They might put those books on there. Makes sense. If they're trying to tailor it to a particular audience that's going to see a particular movie, makes sense that they would do, you know, like a Hawkeye comic, Captain America comic, Avengers comic, a Black Widow comic. specifically tailored because people saw the movie, they're excited, they want to get the comic. That makes sense. And I like that idea. I don't know how they really expect a comic shop to take the time out of their day to curate this list, which I guess maybe that's the easy part, but to actually service the rack. Because really, in the way that I read this, it seems to me like the shop would be the one servicing the rack, because they're the ones that are curating the list of books that are going on here. They're the ones that actually own the spinner rack. It's not, you know, the CVS or Walgreens or the movie theater or the record store that's paying for the rack, because Diamond requires you to have a Diamond account, and the Diamond accounts are generally reserved for comic book stores and a few other businesses that may be allowed to do business with Diamond. It's a little weird. I'm going to have a comic shop owner probably in a few weeks come on the show, and we'll talk about that a little bit. So that place has no interest in having the rack there, other than the rack is there for maybe an additional purchase, right? Somebody might pick up some of these comics. They could make a percentage of the sale of that. The shop would make a percentage of sales of that. But it seems like a lot of work to me to have shops curate that list. Because what shop owner is going to want to take the time out of their day to go and see if the rack needs to be refilled, what books are selling well, what aren't, analyze the sales to make sure that they optimize their profits on that? That seems like a whole lot of work for just a spinner rack. In particular, when these guys are already having such a tough time keeping their stores open, make sure they keep their store stock and keep their customers happy. Now, I understand it could lead to additional revenue for the shop by having the spinner rack elsewhere, but is that necessarily the case? I don't know. I want you guys to think about what I said. Let me know what you think about it. You can tweet at me, at Geekvine, and then, of course, nerdylegion@gmail.com is the email address. And I'm really curious, in particular, those of you that maybe have a lot of friends who don't read comics, or maybe some of you that have been reading comics for a long time that remember spinner racks. Do you think there's a place in the market for this? Do you think your comic shop would actually give a damn to take the time out to go refill these things? Let me know, because I'm very, very curious. Very curious. I think in places where maybe there's only one comic shop in the whole town, there may be some kind of market for that here. But in bigger places where people are already used to going to a shops, I'm not sure if this is going to really work out very well. But let me know. I could be perfectly wrong. I'm okay with admitting when I'm wrong. Not a problem. Let's get on to some listener feedback. And I want to kick off with an email that I received from friend of the show, regular listener, and of course, previous guest, Monica Munoz, who does The Friendship Paradox. Go read that. If you haven't, shame on you. Go read it. You know what? I'll still buy you a copy. You want to read it? Let me know. I will buy you a copy on Comixology. Monica says, "Hi, Martin. I want to chime in about the recent episode." So she is talking about last week's episode in which I talked about Hollywood needs to double down on superhero movies and not put them by the wayside. And this was based on a quote that was said by a CEO of, I can't remember if it was Fox or one of the movie production companies, where she said that we need to concentrate on doing more varied content, stuff like, what was the movie? Now I can't remember what movie she said. I remember one of them was The Martian, and the other one was the Something Showman. God, I should listen to my own podcast. Anyways, irrelevant. I want to chime in about the recent episode. I think that the comments from the Fox executive aren't completely wrong. What's wrong with that? With diversifying the movies, in the sense that not everything can be superheroes. And reading the article, she doesn't say she's against all comic-based properties, which is what you suggested in the podcast. There are more properties with different types of stories. All right, so Monica and I had an email exchange, and I'm not going to read that email exchange. What I told her is, if that's the impression that she got, that's not what I was saying. I do believe in diversifying, and that's the reason why I mentioned, you know, all these books from Image and, you know, Vault and Black Mask and stuff that are getting optioned. Because I don't just want superhero movies. I want a diverse set of films. And to me, it's perfectly okay for Hollywood to take inspiration from stories that already have a fan base, a following, and to make those into movies that I think a lot of people will enjoy. Because as I said in that episode, and I'm pretty sure I said, there's a lot of comic book movies that I wouldn't know are comic book movies unless I'm like really entrenched in comics, right? So like Kingsman or Wanted, Red, like movies like that. What's the one that just came out? Atomic Blonde? I mean, as many comics as I read, I had no idea Atomic Blonde was a comic book movie until like a couple weeks after when a buddy of mine saw it and talked to me about the comic. And I was like, well, holy crap. So there's that. Then again, I haven't seen Avengers, New Spider-Man, or X-Men movies, and I don't care at all. I don't blame you. They're okay. But, you know, whatever. Also, maybe I'm wrong, but I got the feeling that you took it personally. When you were reading top grossing lists, you said something like the movies nerds like, which made me think you were trying to prove her wrong, like defending your taste. I was not defending my taste. The point that I was trying to prove is a quarter of the top 100 films, highest grossing films of all time, are comic book movies. And it doesn't make sense as a business to not want to do those movies. And that's why I said double down, because if that's the moneymaker, then you need to keep making those kind of movies. I understand perfectly want to do different kinds of stuff of movies, but if that's where the money is, I don't know how it works elsewhere. And, you know, Monica's in Mexico, so things may be different there. But in the U.S., we do have laws in place that say a business is responsible for making the most amount of money possible in order to benefit the owners and shareholders, in particular for, you know, a public company, a company that's traded in the stock market. It is the fiduciary duty of a business to make as much money as possible for their investors. And if the money is in making these kind of movies, they need to keep making these movies and make more of them, not less. With that said, that goes back to my original point. I don't just want superhero movies. I want more varied types of stories with comic book properties. And again, even if they don't sell well, it is a great place for Hollywood to mine content, right? Because there could be stories being told that are completely different and new and exciting for just the average moviegoer. And that's important. That's important to keep Hollywood alive. And I do believe in that because I love watching movies. I watch so many damn movies. You know, all I talk about is comics here. You guys think I love comics? I love the hell out of some movies. Some genres in particular, right? So like sci-fi and horror are my favorites. But I love movies and I want to continue watching movies. Anyways, Monica goes to say, anyways, I get it. Superhero movies make $1 million or make millions of dollars, and it's kind of ridiculous to say they have to stop making them. I also get the point to do something else. All right, cool. So, I mean, we're kind of in agreement, Monica. I think maybe you misunderstood the way I said it, and maybe I didn't explain it properly. So I did apologize to Monica, and if you're listening to this and that's the feeling that you got, then I apologize to you. My point, again, was just to say we can't ignore these things in order to diversify. We need to include these things when we diversify because they're making so much money. It's important. So thank you, Monica, for the email. Of course, she sent that to nerdylegion@gmail.com. I very much appreciate it. Go check out Monica's book. It's freaking awesome. And a little monkey told me that I may be appearing in it in an issue. Who knows? All right, let's go to some Twitter questions. At White Noise Media said, what suggestions would you give to indie publishers like Vault Comics and Ahoy Comics? Of course, I talked about Ahoy on yesterday's episode, so check that out. They did reach out to me, by the way, because I guess they listened to the episode. So I will have some folks from Ahoy Comics probably a little later, maybe like a month or so. And we're going to be talking about the idea behind the line, the books that they're doing, why they're doing what they're doing. You know, I kind of poo-pooed on one of the books. I don't want you to think that I'm not excited for it. I do want more publishers doing more interesting, varied things. So what advice would you give to indie publishers like Vault Comics and Ahoy Comics and others to keep readers happy? Mine would be, number one, deliver books on time. Number two, minimize events. And my reply was, most favorite question ever. Maybe. It's up there. Thanks. So this is something I think about all the time. And I think, you know, you definitely hit on a couple of really important ones for me. Number one is deliver books on time. I think that's always going to be the case. You know, within our group of friends, for example, we have a little joke going about Black Mask. Anytime a new Black Mask book comes out and I start talking about it, or anybody really starts talking about it, there's always somebody that chimes in and says, well, we'll get the first issue, but when is number two going to come out? And, you know, it's kind of a joke, but it's also a little unfair because the majority of the books that they put out do come out on time. There's just a few that kind of end up taking a little bit longer. And I understand why some of those things happen sometimes. So I'm not going to knock them on that. And there could be a million different reasons. But in the way that the comic book market is, it is incredibly important to be consistent when you're doing something creative like making a comic. I mean, we could take it to something else. So, what's the guy's name? That's Lord of the Rings. Whatever the guy that does Game of Thrones is, that guy. I'm surprised people are still so excited about it. And I mean, maybe the fact that there's a TV show keeps people excited, but he's been working on the next book, the next sequel in the series of books for like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years. And it keeps getting pushed back and pushed back. I mean, I understand people love a particular property and they want the thing to come out, the next story to come out. But I'm going to tell you, if something I loved that much was kept on getting delayed for so long, I would really lose interest. And I think the majority of people would lose interest. I mean, our society now is so, you know, like we have no attention span for anything. And I purposely do certain things to try to keep my interest in stuff. I see nothing wrong with having a little bit of do nothing time. I think that's important. We're not going to talk about that. If you want to hear some of my tips, you can go listen to the Nerd Legion podcast with me and Nick, because I'm sure we've talked about that many a time. Matter of fact, I think we talked about that recently. So delivering books on time is key. So if you say the book's going to come out every 2 weeks, it better damn be out in 2 weeks. If you say it's going to be monthly, it better damn be out monthly. If you say it's quarterly, it better damn be out quarterly. Now we could take, you know, big mainline books, for example. I mean, I've talked about DC stuff recently that really just pisses me off. I don't mind the fact that you're doing an event, but you know, if you're going to put this thing out and you want to keep me excited, you've got to put the book out. I can't tell you how many people I know have lost interest in Doomsday Clock because the book has no consistent schedule. They'll put it on a date and they're like, oh, well, just kidding. It'll be the week after. Oh, just kidding. We're going to push it back 2 months. Like, that doesn't make any sense, right? If, in particular, if you're working on one project, you should completely dedicate your time to do that. Okay. Completely dedicate your time. If you're working in multiple, I understand things get rough, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, come on. If you announce, if as a publisher, you announce book months and months in advance, you should have this book already kind of put together. Okay. Image ran into this issue a long, long time ago, and Image, you know what? Kind of fixed it. Not entirely fixed it, but they've kind of fixed it. And with Image, the thing is, if we decide we're going to put your book out, you need to have 3 issues out so we can put those in previews and we can solicit the book. Makes perfect sense. You cannot put a new story out and that book not come out on time. Okay. And so their argument is you need to have it all finished, but at least if you have 3 issues done, that gives you plenty of time to work on the remainder of the series, because usually a lot of the time they do miniseries, right? Like 4, 5, 6 issues. So it would make perfect sense. You're like halfway done. Pretty sure you can do the other half in the time that you have, right? Between the time it's put in previews, that would give you like 6 months. 6 months if you have 3 issues done. That's insane. You got to be able to finish that. So delivering books on time is absolutely key. Absolutely key. There is no creative team in the world. There's no character in the world that will keep my interest if I don't get the stories on time, period. All right, so that's number one. For me, number two is pricing. And I talk about pricing all the time because it's important. And I don't want anyone to ever say pricing doesn't matter. I absolutely think it matters. Okay. If a book gets high enough, you may drop it. You know, there's people that buy tons of books. Price might not be an issue. But you know what? If a book starts creeping up and it's cutting into your budget, you may need to cut out some books and you may not drop a particular title, but you may drop others as a result. So pricing is key. And I personally still don't know what the threshold is for me. I did that poll, like a month, 2 months ago, and the threshold for most people that replied was $3.99, and that's where comics are for the most part now. I think that's fair. I'm still very curious how this whole DC bi-weekly $3.99 thing's going to work out. I think at $2.99, people were all in. At $3.99, it becomes a little bit tougher because you could always, you know, before with that price difference, you could pick up a second title, right? You could do one of the bi-weeklies and then pick up a monthly book. And now you can't do that. So you might have to drop a book if your budget is lower. So pricing is important. I think $3.99 is still good. I'm actually okay with going up higher on some books. You know, like I talked about Brother Nash a couple weeks ago, and I had Bridget on here. By the way, I got to meet her at Hero. She was freaking awesome. We talked for a few minutes. I'm probably going to end up getting some artwork from her. But anyways, that book is $6.99. And you know what? I'm okay with it because the book is 72 pages. And it's 3 issues. So, you know, like, that's almost like 6 comics worth, or even more. If most books are 22 pages, that's like 10 issues worth a book. And so when you look at it that way, I mean, the issues would end up being like $1.80. I mean, come on, that's peanuts. So it just depends on how you look at it. But pricing, I think, is key. Another thing that's key for me is consistency. And by that, I mean creatively. And not necessarily with a creative team, but with a creative vision. We'll just do Jeff Johns because I'm looking at Comixology right now. There's a Jeff Johns sale. I might need to get some stuff. 80% off. I mean, you can't go wrong. If Jeff Johns, you know what? We can't use Jeff Johns. I was just banging on Doomsday Clock. All right, let's try something else. You know what? I'm not even going to choose a creator. I don't want to call anybody out. So if such and such publisher decides, okay, this person's going to write the book, this person's going to do the art, okay? What I want is, how long is this person on the book? Okay, so the writer might last a longer time than the artist, right? So DC has a lot of rotating artists to allow for the biweekly schedule. And that, I'm totally good with that, right? Back in the day, we used to get books where like there's like three or four artists in a book because an artist can't get a book finished and they have to bring in an extra guy. And maybe that guy has no time. So then a third guy comes in, does a page. I hate that. I hate that. What I want is consistency. Okay, from start to finish, I want the same artist. Same artist. Now, if you want to switch in between arcs, I'm totally okay with that. If you're going to do like a one shot in between for whatever reason, that's going to kind of bug me, right? Because if I'm reading an arc, I want to finish reading the arc. And so I want that one shot to give the next guy some time to happen in between arcs. That makes sense to me. That is consistency. So consistency is key. Consistency is key. You mentioned mini vicing events. I agree, and I think we're doing a lot better in that in comics. So that's not a giant concern to me. It was back in the day, and I'm sure you've been reading comics for a long time, and I'm sure many of you listening have been reading comics for a long time. But, you know, some of you may remember back in the day, like Superman. Every single Superman title used to cross over, right? Batman was the same way. But at least with Superman, whenever you had all these crossover stories, you had a system where you were able to discern how to read the story. So they used to do like the little diamond things on there. And so you knew how to follow the story. And that was beautiful. Perfect. That goes back to consistency. If you're going to have multiple books crossing over, I want to know how to read it and what order to read it. Okay. And I don't want to go to like a website to find out or go to Reddit or wherever people go to get like checklists on these things. I just want to pick up the book, enjoy it, and know where to go next. Consistency. Consistency is key. I'm trying to think what other things would be like deal breakers for me. Pricing, consistency, and time. And I think that's really about it. I don't care if they want to experiment with new genres or new storytelling techniques or new ways of putting issues together or formats or page sizes or any of that stuff. Most of that is irrelevant to me. But I think those three things are key. What I will put in there also as a fourth is going to be available digitally. Now, some of you still read exclusively print, and that's fine. Okay, I've been there with you. I salute you for your efforts. I love the smell of comics also. But you know what? Digital is very simple, and it's so easy to do. And a particular younger generation, I think, reads a lot more comics digitally as well. And if you don't have them available digitally, how are they going to read your comic? I understand some publishers maybe don't want to put them out digitally because then, you know, they'll show up on whatever pirate websites have comics. I have no idea. I pay for all my comics, so it doesn't bother me. But, you know, some people don't have the budget for that, and I understand why they do it. But at the same time, you're hurting the creator, right? That book may not come out if you're not supporting it. So have it available digitally, right? I understand you don't want to have somebody buy a copy and then digitize it and put it somewhere else. But I mean, they can do that with a print comic. I've seen, you know, like old, like Golden Age, Silver Age books that were scanned copies. Like who decided to take the time out of their day to scan hundreds of comics on a computer scanner and then make a zip file or whatever format they use and distribute that is beyond me. I don't have time for that stuff. So if you have time for that, kudos to you. But, you know, there's always a way. Why give people an additional barrier of entry? Just make it as easy as they can to buy your book. You can come on this podcast. I will gift people your book. I do that every week. I have no problem with that, you know? So I guess maybe we could put in a bonus fifth, you know, have good customer relationships, at least with, you know, people that maybe are able to influence what people buy and don't buy. And I'm not including myself in that. So before anybody says, oh, here comes Martin, I don't care about that. You know, I just do this podcast for me. I enjoy the fact that tons of people listen, but I just want to talk about comics. You know what I mean? And customer relationships are important, right? I've talked about Valiant many a times. And the great thing about Valiant when the old crew was there was they were amazingly approachable, right? And that's important like a convention, right? You want to have people there showing the face, having creators there, having the publisher there or the editor, whoever. So people know like these aren't just guys up on social media, you know, behind a desk all day long. Like these are people, and that's important, right? Having a relationship with your readership in some way. So I hope that answers your question at White Noise Media. That was a little longer than I expected to make the answer, but Thanks for that one. I appreciated it. Next up from at Tim3Robin. Would like to hear you name some of your favorite runs and characters slash teams, i.e. Morris and Batman. I've caught a few, but love lists and such. At Tim Robin is my Morrison buddy. He and I have talked privately about Morrison quite a bit. I know some of you are probably sick of hearing me talk about Morrison because some of you hate Grant Morrison, and it's okay to be wrong. That's all I gotta say. I still love you. Jesus still loves you. I'm just kidding. Matter of fact, Tim3Robin put a list on Twitter. So if you want to find the tweet where I asked the question, you know, asked for people to bring me questions for this podcast, he put a couple of lists. There's a DC, favorite DC runs, and there's some great stuff on there. He's got Batman Zero Year, Justice League Dark Side War, Teen Titans Kids Game, Batman Long Halloween and Dark Victory, Teen Titans Future Is Now, Green Lantern Sinister Core War, Detective Comics Alone in the Place of Living, Hawkman Allies and Enemies, Batman Earth 1, New Teen Titans Judas Contract, and then he also had, Batman Grant Morrison, Teen Titans by Johns, JLA by Morrison, Detective by Tinian, JSA Hawkman by Johns, Green Lantern by Johns also, Flash Rebirth by Williamson, Action Comics, which one was this? Oh, Secret Origin, hell yeah, good stuff. So you can check that list out if you don't want to rewind and write them down again. But great list. I do have some favorites, and I didn't spend a whole lot of time on this, but there's some that I've talked about probably extensively over my many a podcast. Number one would be X-Men Manowar from Valiant by Robert Venditti, and the artist on that would be Kerry Nord, Diego Bernard, Rafa Sandoval, and I'm sure there's a few others on there. A fantastic run, 50 plus issues, absolutely brilliant, and oddly enough, a cohesive 50 plus issue story. So that's also nice to see in modern comics. If I go back a little bit further, Bone by Jeff Smith, still a classic. I think I reread most of it again last year. Still holds up, still great. I talk about the Wildstorm like almost every week, it seems. And that's one of my favorite current long-running runs by the same creative team. That's Warren Ellis and John Davis Hunt. You mentioned Grant Morrison, so of course that's on my list as well. Batman by Grant Morrison. I know you included it on your list as well. The Batman and Robin, which is freaking brilliant. That was Morrison and Frank Quietly, if I'm not mistaken. And on the Batman proper, it was him, Andy Kubert, Tony Daniel, and I'm sure there were a couple other ones in there. But those were the two longest running ones. Really great runs, by the way. There's some amazing stuff in there, and still holds up, very much holds up. Couple that are kind of, I don't know, one is definitely out of left field. Anything by Bob Haney. This will seem weird. But anything by Bob Haney, especially the Brave and the Bold stuff, I recently started reading some of that stuff, and it is the craziest crap that you will ever read in comics, and it's absolutely brilliant and hilarious and amazing. You know, he did a lot of DC stuff. I want to say like starting in the mid-50s, probably into the late 60s. I could be wrong on the dates, but the Brave and the Bold stuff is brilliant. Of course, there's a lot of Batman stories there, so I love seeing those. I recently read, oh God, what issue was that? Brave and the Bold 115, and I could not believe what I was reading. So Batman's after these guys that kidnapped this girl, and he gets killed as he's trying to find them because he wants to find this girl. He gets killed like at the beginning of the issue, and the Atom shows up because the Atom's doing some kind of like conference or something, or maybe, I don't know, teaching at a school in Gotham. I can't remember what it is, but the Atom's there, the Atom's in town, and somehow like knows that Batman's dead. So he goes to try to revive him, and he shrinks down and goes into Batman's head and starts like stomping all around his brain and like reconnecting like nerve endings and blood vessels and stuff, and he's got a like a little TV that he carries around with him, so he can see like out Batman's eyes, right? So he knows like what's going on around Batman. It's like super weird stuff. Anyway, so he basically like stomps his brain back to life, and Batman comes back to life, and he's like super pissed off that he got killed, and just starts punching dudes in the face. It's freaking amazing. Brave and the Bold 115. You know what? Let me make sure it's 115. I'm pretty sure it is. Let's see here. This is great podcasting as I search for things live on the podcast. Yeah, 115. Definitely check that out. But the Brave and the Bold stuff that Bob Haney did was brilliant. There's some crazy stuff on there. And another favorite run is also a Batman run. I mean, surprise, surprise. Anything by Jim Aparo, of course. But I was thinking about it, and I really dig like when Aparo first got on the book. So that would be starting with Batman 417, which is, oh God, what the hell's the name of this run? I can't remember now. But it's the first appearance of the KG Beast, which I absolutely freaking adore. I know most people hate the KG Beast, and shame on you, KG Beast is great. But 417 through the end of Death in the Family, whatever issue that is, 428, 429, 430, something like that. Really fantastic run. And the writer on that was Jim Starlin. So if you're a Starlin fan, I mean, you can't really go wrong with Starlin and Batman. I'm just going to throw that out there. I thought that was a fantastic run. So thanks for the question. Matter of fact, since he brought it up, I mentioned last week I was going to start doing this this top five segment. That's still going to happen. I didn't have time to do it last week, but I'm going to do my best to do it this Friday. So on top five, I'll be doing some lists, and I think you'll definitely enjoy that at Tim3Robin. And I hope the rest of you enjoy it as well. Let's do, how are we doing on time here? All right, we're doing pretty good on time. We're going to do one more question then. Last question is from at Jay Forgets. Of course, this is Jay Loving from the Best of the Rest podcast. Go check that out. The guys do a great job over there, Jay and Dennis. Jay says, I hear some people say the comic book industry has never been stronger. Others say it's in dire shape. So which is it? Or is the answer something else entirely? Well, Jay, welcome to 2018, where everything right is wrong and everything wrong is right, and nobody knows what the hell's happening. Does that answer your question? Probably not. So let me try my best to answer it. I will be doing an episode on, man, I might need to push this top five back. I don't know. We'll see. I want to do an episode on comic book sales. I know some people hate that sales stuff, but I think there's some interesting stuff going on in the comic book industry. And, you know, to be honest with you, the answer really is both. The answer is both. I was just looking at May numbers, about an hour or so ago, and the numbers actually look really good. They look really, really good. There's seven or eight. If you include the Double Ship Batman, I think it's eight. Eight books over 100,000 copies. And, you know, I think I talked about that briefly maybe a month ago when the April numbers were out, cause there were like three or four. Now there's seven or eight. And I think that says a lot for, you know, strong, releases from all the publishers. The top five, by the way, were Amazing Spider-Man 800 because of that Red Goblin thing. Venom number one was number two. Doomsday Clock 5 at number three. Avengers number one at number four. And Black Panther number one at number five. All really great books, by the way. I enjoyed all of them, including Doomsday Clock, you naysayers. I'm still enjoying that series. But again, bring it out on time, folks. More people will like it if you bring it out on time. I think Batman was like number seven and eight, so and those were still over 100,000 copies. So I mean, really strong, really, really strong sales. It was I think over last year it was like a negligible difference, like 1 or 2% difference. What I found really interesting was the amount of comics sold in May compared to like 15 years ago was up 22%. So when people say the comic book industry is dying, they're probably wrong. I mean, it's not doing great, but it's doing better than it was 10 or 15 years ago. And I think that's important. You know, I don't know if we'll ever get back to the, you know, 20, 25 years ago figure. Or, I mean, if you go further back, comics were selling in the millions back in like the 40s and 50s. Well, more the 40s. 50s things started kind of winding down. We're going to blame the comics code, but we're not talking about that right now. That will come at some point in the future. I think the comic industry is doing fine. There's a lot less books coming out. I think there were 400 and roughly 70 books that came out in May as opposed to like 520 or 30 previously. I mean, it's not a huge drop, and especially when you consider the sales, the overall sales. The percentage difference does not account for that 50, 60 book difference. So, you know, people are buying what they like, and publishers are putting out what people are buying, and I think that's important, right? We want diversity. If we go back to this thing, just like I want diversity in my movies, I want diversity in my comics. So I don't want just superhero comics. And by the way, when I say diversity in comics, I'm not talking about like race or sexual preference or anything like that. I'm awesome with that also. If you're not, that's your prerogative. I love all characters from all walks of life. Okay, so I'm totally good with that. But when I say diversity in comics, I want like various genres, various publishers. I want tons of publishers. I want tons of comics that I can read and tons of different things that I can recommend on this podcast every week, because it keeps my exciting for comics going to always read something different. It's important to me. I cannot tell you that enough. God, I feel like I say that every damn episode. So I think sales are fine. Okay. The drops that we see from month to month are kind of irrelevant to me. Really, when you want to look at the trends, you really need to look over multiple years, even over like a decade. And I think that's when you really get solid numbers. And if we look in the long term, I think comics are doing great right now. You know, compared to 10, 15 years ago, they're doing fantastic. So the answer is both. The answer is both. I don't think people should worry about comics dying. I don't think that's going to happen. I still feel like there will be one day where print comics will be a niche market, but I think comics overall, print and digital, comics are going to be around for forever. And that makes me happy because I want to read comics for forever. God, if I could just sit and read comics all day, like that would be heaven to me. Heaven. And I'm sure some of you agree with that as well. So I hope that answers your question, Jay. The industry's fine. It's not going anywhere. You know, when people tend to like a particular viewpoint of things and stick with it, and they try to push that point on other people. And that goes for both sides. So people that say comics are dying, they're all about just comics dying. People that say comics are fine, they're all about comics are fine. And the truth really is somewhere in the middle. It could be definitely be better, but it's not horrible, you know. And we're seeing them try new things, right? So GameStop bringing in comics, that could be good. The spinner rack thing I talked about earlier, that could be good. But, you know, you also got to look at how you read the numbers, right? That's also important. One day I'll explain how the numbers actually work, but basically things are multiples of Batman. So Batman will always generally be around 100,000 copies, and people order based on kind of that, right? So when they say like Venom sold, I can't remember what it was right now, but let's just say for 500,000, that would be like a 5x multiple of Batman, right? And so that's how those numbers come about. It's kind of weird, right? Same thing with, if you look at the chart on this thing, DC Nation Zero, I don't think ever was put on the list. And part of the reason for that is Diamond generally does not account for sales of books under a dollar, right? And DC Nation Zero was 25 cents. Now, that's not always the case. So the whatever that Walking Dead issue was that came out a few months ago, or last year rather, I think that was 25 cents. And I'm pretty sure that counted. They also counted the 25 cent saga that came out last year, maybe. But they're not counting DC Nation Zero. And the explanation for that is they don't want a 25 cent book to skew the overall sales numbers for the industry. And that makes sense to me, but it's also kind of a misrepresentation of what the numbers are, right? If you can toy with the numbers any way you want, then do they really mean anything? And, you know, there's an argument to be made that really the sales numbers that we get from Diamond don't mean anything, because it doesn't necessarily mean sell-through. It's just what comic book stores are buying, right? That's why we don't have digital numbers. I have seen some websites do like a top 10 digital sales. I'm not sure how they're getting those numbers, and I'd love to find out. So if you know, let me know. Overall, we still don't know, like, everything that's sold digitally, what they're selling, right? We just know it's not the majority of books. All right. You know what? I'm going to do one more question, because this question also happens to be a plug. This question came from at ChrisCampbell8, which, of course, Chris Campbell, good buddy of mine, co-host of the Gotham by Geeks podcast. He says, I said, do you have a question you want me to address on Comics of Today? He said, yes. What is Nick Wetmore's query for us on Thursday? So this ended up being a joke on the thread. You can read it if you want a little chuckle. But the plug is that I will be guesting on Gotham by Geeks. We're going to be recording as of the time this comes out tomorrow, so Thursday evening. I'm not sure when the episode will come out. I would assume within the next week. And Chris and I got to hang out at Heroes Con this past weekend. We went to some booths, talked to some very awesome people, and of course talked about Batman. We will be joined by a secret special guest who has he has appeared on podcasts before. We'll just say that. And a person who I love dearly, who's also very much in love with Batman comics. And we're going to be talking about Batman books and collecting Batman books and the con experience in trying to acquire books. And I think it'll be a great discussion. So be sure to subscribe to Gotham by Geeks so you can hear us talk about that. Chris and I did a collecting episode. Oh, God, I don't remember how long it was. But I remember it was pretty funny because they apparently received a lot of feedback on that episode. And people were saying how much they loved the episode of Chris and I talking about collecting Batman. And I think it maybe made Daryl a little upset that everyone was so in love with that and not the book discussion. But of course, the podcast is great. So check it out. Those guys are awesome. I also got to hang out with Daryl and Mike from Mike Williams Week Reads this past weekend. So shout out to those guys. Be sure to check out their podcast, Geek Brunch Podcast, Geek Brunch Retrocast, Mike Williams Week Reads, Gotham by Geeks, and Daryl's on like a billion different podcasts also. So go to the Taylor Network and check those out. I think that will wrap it up for this episode. This went a little bit longer than I thought it would, but I hope you enjoyed it. I will be back tomorrow with a guest because it's Thursday, and of course I need some comic book therapy on Therapy Thursday. Thanks for listening. Catch you then.